The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
And we made it to a Friday. Yay! The weekend is this close. But the weekend's not going to be fun for a lot of people living, well, in the Louisiana area, let's say that. We've got a busy show for you today. We're going to be speaking with the one and only Harry Shearer in a couple of minutes. And later on in the program, journalist Brian Karam. We'll get to that a little later. But starting with Harry Shearer, he is a longtime, at least part-time resident of New Orleans, who a few years ago produced and directed a documentary called The Big Uneasy about why New Orleans flooded during Katrina. It was not a direct hit. So we'll talk to Harry about that as New Orleans is preparing for another hit, this time from a guy named Barry. But as we try to do, we like to start off with the funny because we're going to be talking about some serious stuff. So we'll start with Harry Shearer, going back to a 2006 album he has out. This one's If JFK Had Lived.
I'm Tom Brokaw. All this week on NBC Nightly News, Dateline NBC, The Today Show, MSNBC, and MSNBC.com, If JFK Had Lived, a major investor drama by NBC News and the editors of Us Weekly.
Sinatra was a nutty guy when he went over to Reagan. I called him up. I said, Frank, what's with the Reagan bit? He said, Johnny Fitz. That's what he called me. He's the only person who called me that. He said, if he's good enough for Jimmy Hoffa Jr., he's good enough for me.
If JFK Had Lived, a compelling memoir of something that never happened.
I think John was my favorite Beatle. He was smart. He was a borderline depressive. And he had the best hair.
Four nights, 5 days, 6 channels. If JFK Had Lived.
I saw Khrushchev just before he died. You know what he said? He said, Kennedy, on that Cuba deal, you were such a putz.
If JFK Had Lived. All this week from NBC News. America's news leader.
Harry Shearer, again, from a 2006 album. God, I forget what it was called. Anyway, Harry Shearer doing his best Tom Brokaw and JFK, if JFK had lived. The reason I started with Harry Shearer today, other than the fact it's Harry Shearer, is because, well, there's a hurricane, or more accurately, still a tropical storm, called Barry, that is expected to make landfall in Louisiana sometime late tonight or early tomorrow, possibly as a Category 1 hurricane. Harry Shearer is an old, I won't say friend, friendly acquaintance, who I've known for years, since my days in LA radio. And a few years ago, he produced a movie called The Big Uneasy, about what happened in New Orleans. Here's how it opens.
We all know what happened in New Orleans on August 29th, 2005. Katrina.
The biggest natural disaster.
Katrina was a natural disaster.
A major American city went through a natural disaster.
Unlike Katrina, where you had a natural
when
disaster.
Katrina, the hurricane, did so much damage in New Orleans.
This natural disaster befell New Orleans.
And yes, it's true. The Mississippi Gulf Coast did suffer devastating damage from a hurricane that day. But as a part-time resident of New Orleans, I became aware over the weeks and months that followed the flood, as did everybody else here, that there was a very different side to that story. And that's the side you're about to see.
That's the side you're about to see if you watch the movie The Big Uneasy, produced, directed, and voiced by Harry Shearer, that tells what happened to New Orleans in the wake of Katrina. And, well, joining us on the line now, I think he's there. Harry, you there?
I am here.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know it's kind of a stressful time in New Orleans, but you got out of there, huh?
Yes, I did. Partly for professional reasons, partly because I have a dear friend who's in very ill health in Los Angeles. I want to make sure I could visit her.
I see. I'm sorry to hear that. I opened a moment ago with an opening monologue from you, the first few lines of your film, The Big Uneasy, which you spent a lot of time and effort on trying to explain what happened to New Orleans in Katrina. Because as you mentioned in the film, New Orleans didn't take a direct hit from Katrina. But it...
No, Katrina passed about 35 miles northeast of the city. There were isolated incidents of wind damage, most notably the Hyatt Hotel near the Superdome. But basically, if you look at the pictures, and it's really easy to Google pictures of the Mississippi Gulf Coast damage from the hurricane and compare them to pictures of the damage that New Orleans experienced, you'll see they're visually entirely different. On the Mississippi Gulf Coast, houses were flattened. They were just demolished down to, you know, sticks of wood. In New Orleans, houses were moved by huge walls of water, relatively intact, but off vertical and about three blocks off where they started. Totally different kinds. You know, cars were implanted in the second stories of houses. So visually, your eye will tell you it's an entirely different kind of event. Yet it was conflated by virtually all of the media.
Right. So you went through all what happened. I mean, it's the levees that didn't hold up. And this you pin on, and I know I'm oversimplifying it, so you can help straighten me out, the Army Corps of Engineers.
Well, it isn't me who did it.
Okay.
I'm a comedy person. I work in show business.
Yes, you do.
The movie was me talking to the people who had done exhaustive investigations, two independent investigations, plus a whistleblower from inside the Corps of Engineers. What I did in the film was let you hear what they said, which is both an investigation from UC Berkeley and an investigation from LSU, conducted pretty much simultaneously, came to remarkably similar conclusions, which is, the Army Corps of Engineers, over the 40 years it had been building that system, not at that time yet complete, it was riven and riddled with engineering mistakes and misfeasance, and that the system collapsed in 53 different places under conditions much less severe than it was supposed to withstand.
Devastating. And
yeah.
So in the ensuing years, they've worked on this. Do you have confidence that the levees have been shored up enough to withstand whatever is coming your way with Barry?
Well, you know, first of all, a note about human nature. If you really... Can I swear on this?
You can say whatever the fuck you want.
Okay. If you fuck up big time and you don't get punished for it, how much of your behavior are you going to change?
None. We're seeing that on display in Washington, D.C. every day.
Exactly. Well, that's... Nobody at the Army Corps of Engineers lost as much as a parking space for killing nearly 2,000 people and costing, I don't know what the exact figure now, of property damage and lost business and lost all of that. They were just given $14 billion by Congress in 2006 and told, well, try again. In April of this year, Scientific American republished an article from an engineering journal that spotted a filing by the Corps of Engineers about this new system in the Federal Register, which is where agencies say what they're going to be asking Congress for, among other things.
Right.
And the Corps says if they don't get $840 million to rebuild the earthen levees, these mounds of earth that are piled up alongside waterways and canals, the system... only completed last year, in May, will stop working, stop giving us the protection it's supposed to by 2023. They told Congress it was going to have a 50-year lifespan. This is like a four-year
wow.
lifespan.
Wow. Wow.
How much confidence will you have?
None. None whatsoever. No. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm an amateur when it comes to this. There's a guy in New Orleans, I'm not going to mention his name because I understand that he wants to retain some semblance of privacy. But he's an engineer. He's had a blog for many years. Now he's on Facebook. He doesn't have the blog anymore. But he has documented through the years incredibly detailed examples with photos and drawings of the kind of misfeasance and malfeasance that I mentioned earlier, both in the old system and in the new system. The whistleblower I had inside the Corps in the film talks about the pumps that were the heart of the new system.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in charge of installing and testing them before she installed them. They never passed their test.
Oh,
they
no.
were installed anyway because the Corps said, we're going to put something in by June 2006. They were, according to her, never up to the job. Fortunately, for all concerned, no major hurricane passed by or through New Orleans in the next serious amount of time, with the exception of 2012 when Hurricane Isaac dropped a lot of rain on its way to landfall in the west of Louisiana. So we dodged a bullet with those pumps. The Corps finally admitted they were temporary, although they were originally promised to be permanent, 50-year lifespan. And what happened in May of last year is they completed installing the new pumps, which supposedly don't have the deficiencies that the previous ones did.
But we'll see.
So this
right?
is a continuing series of let's be generous and call them mishaps by an agency which clearly doesn't fear any repercussions. If you nearly destroy an American city and people just say, here's a lot more money, go try again, what do they got to fear from screwing up some more?
Yeah, right. Good question. And what's scary is what's coming your way. Tropical Storm Barry now is expected to make landfall late tonight or early tomorrow in Louisiana. They're saying possibly as a Category 1 hurricane. But the thing that's disturbing, it's not the winds that are an issue with this storm. It's the rain again. It's the water.
Yeah.
And the Mississippi River is usually at 6 to 8 feet this time of year, but it's at 16 feet now. And Barry's threatening a storm surge of 2 to 3 feet. They're saying it means the river could crest tomorrow at 19 feet, a level not seen in almost 70 years. And it could dump as much as 10 inches of rain before it moves out. This is frightening.
Well, it's a triple whammy that hasn't been experienced, I don't think, in any American city before. The Mississippi has been high all spring long. Everybody knew it. The Corps of Engineers even opened up a spillway to keep the river from flooding New Orleans a couple times in the last 2 months. The aforementioned engineer, I believe, I'm not sure it's either him or an organization called levees.org, recently discovered that one of the places that the river levee is not at the height it's supposed to be is at a facility on, and I'm not kidding you, Leake Avenue, L-E-A-K-E,
no.
that is the headquarters of the United States Army Corps of Engineers.
Wow. Something's just meant to be.
You can't write them better than
no,
that.
No, you can't. Well, you might be able to. You know, I've been
I even put the street sign that said Leake Avenue in the film because I just wanted people to know.
To know that it's real. Harry Shearer is with us, and I was remiss. I didn't give you a proper introduction because I figure everybody knows who you are. But Harry Shearer is a true Renaissance man, an actor, author, director, comedian, musician, philosopher, political satirist, radio host, heard weekly on radio stations
radio.
Around the world. We're going to get to that. The show is celebrating its 35th year. This is this is a big deal. Now, you moved from the one station in L.A. Now you're on KCSN?
Yes, but my home station is in New Orleans now.
Ah.
So the show is syndicated by the station in New Orleans, WWNO. But fortunately, we found a new home. Radio home in LA, so people can still hear it there.
Absolutely. And of course, people can visit harryshearer.com and get links to everything from the radio show to the film to the albums and all that. And in fact, The Big Uneasy, I found, I don't know if it's supposed to be this way, but it's available right now on Vimeo, looks like for free. So if people want to watch it, they can.
You know, it wasn't done as a commercial enterprise, to put it mildly. So, you know, my purpose in making it was to get people to see it and to understand that the main three takeaways from the media coverage of the event in 2005, that a city below sea level, a humongous storm, mainly poor black people affected, all those narratives were incorrect. As of 2007, which is 2 years after the flood, Tulane did a check, and more than half the city is at or above sea level. The storm was no bigger than Hurricane Betsy of 1965, after which President Johnson promised New Orleans a system that would protect it against the maximum probable hurricane in the future. And the victims in the city, 80% of which was flooded, included black people, white people, Asian people, Latinos, poor people, rich people, everybody. It's obvious that rich people had an easier time of coming back, of course. But, you know, everyone was affected. Everything was flooded.
Absolutely.
With very few exceptions. You know, there's a little strip along the Mississippi River that wasn't flooded back then.
I can't even imagine. And I live in South Florida, where we've been hit by a number of hurricanes over the last couple of decades.
No, I mean, the first day I was back at that time, no birds, no children, no dogs, no traffic, no streetlights, no phone, no newspapers, no mail. I mean, it was just, finally the water had retreated and been removed from the city, but that took 6 weeks. So the place had been marinating in, you know, basically eventually very hot water for 6 weeks.
Wow.
So a ridiculously huge cleanup job that was pretty much done by individuals, aside from the Army Corps got the contract to cart out all the trash that people threw out of their ruined homes. And I think it was the local newspaper that found that while the Corps charged a rate of $75 a ton for the job, by the time it went five subcontractors down to the guys who actually drove the trucks, they were getting $5 a ton.
Oh, my God.
It's an amazing story, this agency. And one of their secrets is, as they're nominally under the Defense Department, Army Corps, although most of the employees are civilians, but they learned from the Defense Department that if you want to protect your budget, you put a project in every congressional district.
Yes.
And that's what they do.
Right. Well, yeah, that makes sense. I don't like it, but that's what they do. Harry Shearer, again, here we are waiting for Barry to make landfall. When I was looking at the news last night, I know I messaged you on Twitter probably at 4 o'clock in the morning because I couldn't sleep, because you and your wife, the wonderful singer-songwriter Judith Owen, are my favorite New Orleans residents. You were the first people
Thank
I
you.
Thought about when I heard this and knew that I wanted to talk with you today. Do you have confidence in the elected officials of Louisiana and New Orleans now any more than the people who were in power over a decade ago?
Well, I think that thanks to George W. Bush, the elected officials of Louisiana got a raw deal. Now, that's not to take the mayor off the hook. He's currently on the hook, spending time in prison in Texas compared to what we're talking about. And again, not excusing or defending him, but by comparison, a trivial offense. He ran a kitchen surface company with his son, and they charged somebody who was doing business with the city, arranged a sweetheart contract. That's bad. It's corrupt. No defending it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about much bigger fish here. So go back to your question. The local agency, which really is on the spot in these situations, is not the city, and the state, of course, runs the National Guard, so they can send National Guard in. But after the 2005 flood, New Orleans and the citizens of the surrounding area reformed their local levee boards, which were corrupt at the time and kind of populated by hacks, or at least people who knew nothing about the job of a levee authority. And now we have on both banks of the river, levee authorities peopled with geologists, hydrologists. By law, they have to be people who are trained in certain specific areas of knowledge that relate to the job of a levee authority in a place like New Orleans. So they're highly competent, competent enough that when the Corps of Engineers completed the system, they turned it over to the levee authorities to maintain on the levee authorities' own dime.
Okay.
Corps of Engineers, that's their normal practice, by the way. They build something, they turn it over to the locals, and now it's like, okay, your job.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's who we're depending on at the moment. The Corps, basically, at times like this, they do inspections with people from the levee authority, inspections of, let's say, the resilience of the levees, the height of the levees, all of that. But their main job right now is to issue reassuring statements. And I can only say about those that the reassuring statement they've delivered since they started building this new system. So they've been giving the media this statement for about 10 years now. Is New Orleans has never had better hurricane protection.
Oh, boy.
Considering that the last one almost killed the city, that's a really low bar.
It is. And I would say that in the last decade, climate conditions on the planet have gotten worse. I mean, the very fact that this tropical storm formed in the Gulf of Mexico, that's unheard of. These things usually form off the coast of Africa.
And we
can track them coming this way. This,
that's
to
correct.
The best of my knowledge, is the first time a storm like this has formed in the Gulf. I think we're just going to be seeing more and more of this as we go forward.
Well, you know, it's interesting. After Katrina, it was predicted that that was the beginning of a wave of increased hurricanes. And then we had, as I mentioned, this interregnum where the hurricane track changed. And for a dozen or more years, most of the major storms went up the Atlantic coast and didn't get into the Gulf. So I think it's harder than we might assume to know where any of this individual stuff is leading. We know that climate change is happening, except for certain people. But how it affects these kinds of systems is, you know, I mean, when you watch the guys on TV, the meteorologists, let's assume they know a little bit about what they're talking about.
Maybe.
And they depict all the forces that are controlling what happens to Tropical Storm Barry. So there's a high-pressure, dry area that moved in from the north that was keeping it from organizing. And then there's wind shear in the upper atmosphere, which controls, you know, its travel in a different in a different dimension. There are a lot of forces impinging on these storms that may or may not be varying at the same rate.
Wow.
And so I agree with your overall warning about what we're heading for. And obviously it's taking place in parts of the globe much faster than it is in the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, it's heating up in the Arctic twice or three times.
It's 90 degrees in Alaska.
Yeah. Let's all go to Alaska for the summer. But, you know, what's happening here is an anomaly caused by clearly climate change may be a factor in having the Mississippi be as high as it's been for as long as it's been.
Right.
As well as the formation of Barry. And, I mean, look, we had, and this was a mistake I saw in the media, we had thunderstorms on Wednesday, not really, I mean, it might have been thrown off as a northern subsidiary, but not really part of the Barry system, that flooded the streets of New Orleans. It was so intense, such hard, heavy rainfall, not for that long. I mean, it doesn't, you know, this weekend is going to be an anomaly because normally that kind of really, really fearsomely, they're having a big clearance sale on rain event. It lasts for a couple hours in New Orleans. The streets will flood. And then 2 hours later, you'll go out and the streets are completely dry because the pumps are really good.
Wow, okay.
The city's pumps.
Right.
But what we're looking at is something very different, which is prolonged rainfall, heavy rainfall for a sustained period of time. And no pumps can keep up with that.
Right.
The pumps can move an inch of water for the first hour and a half an inch after that.
And that's not enough. Well, now we're at the point where all that's left is for the people who do that sort of thing to pray, and people like me cross our fingers and send good wishes and hope for the best. I mean, that's
well,
what we
you
do
know,
right cross, now.
Crossing your fingers is just a physical form of prayer.
Oh, okay. Well, it's good to know.
That's why you form a cross.
Oh, I see. I learn something new every day. Harry Shearer, let's, if we can, just take a couple of minutes to talk about some fun things, if we can. Any new projects to tell us about?
Yes. My dear, dear friend, Derek Smalls, former bass player of the band, formerly known as Spinal Tap, is launching a little West Coast mini tour in November.
Wow.
Of his show, Lukewarm Water Live, with a band and a symphony orchestra and big name guest stars.
Wow.
And
Derek Smalls, you know, did put out an album in the last year, didn't he?
Yes. Yes, he did. It's called Smalls Change, which is parentheses, Reflections Upon Aging.
Oh,
it's an aging rocker's reflection upon being an aging rocker.
Wow. You know, I just found a videotape that somebody had given me years ago. Who knows? It might have even been you. I don't know. It was back in the Mark and Brian days, of outtakes from Spinal Tap. It's on a VHS, and I just hooked up a VCR machine to my computer to digitize all these tapes that have been piling up, so I can't wait to see it. Do you know the tape of which I'm speaking?
No, because there were, you know, about three different DVD editions that had different sets of outtakes on them. And so somebody may have copied them off a DVD, or there may be something else.
Yeah?
I don't know.
Well, I'll look. I'll let you know.
The one that sort of features in all of the outtake collections that I've seen is Bruno Kirby Jr., who played the limo driver for the band.
Yeah, the late Bruno Kirby, right.
Yeah, later on that night, we invite him to our hotel suite, get him fucked up, and he's stripped down to his skivvies with a piece of pizza that he's pretending is a microphone doing his Frank Sinatra impression. And we were so in love with that, and we thought, this movie skids to a screaming halt for 10 minutes while this bit happens. So we can't do it, but it's there
funny.
In the extras.
Oh, I can't wait to watch it. Well, hopefully I have that. I'll let you know. Any possibility of a Spinal Tap reunion?
No. We did get together in New York in April to when the Tribeca Film Festival paid tribute to the 35th anniversary of Spinal Tap.
Wow.
And Chris, Michael, and I did about 7 songs as ourselves acoustically. But no, one of the reasons that Derek has gone off on his own is that that band is
it's done.
I don't think is an X band.
I see. It's an X band. You do have
the way the parrot in Mighty Python was an X parrot.
I understand. I got the reference. Your wife, I mentioned briefly before, the wonderful Judith Owen. She's touring Europe right now, isn't she?
She's touring Europe right now. She just played a music festival in Madrid last night. And in June in London, she premiered what I think is her most amazing work yet, a suite of songs about the women that loved and were used by Picasso.
Oh.
And so she'll be bringing that. I think that's going to be her main thing next year in selected cities.
Wow.
It's stunning work. And, I mean, the people who saw it in London were just, like, absolutely stunned at the end of it because it's dramatic and beautiful and all sorts of different kinds of music, but all with this common thread of these women who fell under this spell, but sort of wanted to.
Right. Yeah, there was a great special, Genius, this series on National Geographic. They did one on Einstein, and the second season was on Picasso. He wasn't a very sympathetic character, but he did love his women.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. Boy, you used a phrase that's come back in the news in another context, but I won't go there.
Oh, okay. We'll have to save that for another time. Harry Shearer, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. I thank you so much for joining us today, and I got my fingers crossed for you and for New Orleans. I hope it passes you by and that the levees hold and the pumps work, and we'll look back on it Monday and say, phew, dodged a bullet there.
Yes, but I hope, and I agree with you, and I thank you for those kind thoughts, but I have been trying to get, and New Orleans news media is, once this is over, going back to this, to examine exactly why the new system will fail to work in as little as 4 years and what we can do about it. And while it's not a national problem, and I don't even want the national media to get involved, I'm concentrating on raising consciousness in the city. us surviving this is not the end of the story.
No, not at all. This is, frankly, sadly, with what's going on in the world, the beginning, in a sense.
Yeah.
By the way, Harry Shearer, we are being heard in New Orleans tonight. I'm guest hosting the broadcast with Brad Friedman. It's heard on 102.3 WHIV in New Orleans, the voice of dissent down there. So
I love that station.
Cool.
It's one of the push buttons on my car.
Awesome.
Radio.
Well, this will be on there tonight. On the broadcast.
Okay.
Harry, thank you again, and hopefully we'll talk again soon, and it'll be a good thing.
Great. Thanks so much, Nicole.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Harry Shearer, one of the greats. He really is, and he's as nice as he sounds. I got lucky to meet him back in the day. I mentioned Mark and Brian, a radio show I used to produce in Los Angeles, where the Spinal Tap guys came on. So I met him then, and then I moved to a music station where I got to play the music of Judith Owen on the air. That's how I got to know her. And as I said, friendly acquaintances. I adore them. They are genuine, real, wonderful people. And, you know, they've lived in New Orleans for years. All right. Lots of stuff going on today. It is a busy Friday. I guess we should get to the news, right? We've got another guest coming up in a little while. I'll explain that to you then. Let's start with the breaking news that has happened, you know, since I recorded the recorded version of What's News this morning. The breaking news, Alex Acosta is out as Secretary of Labor. Donald Trump making the announcement this morning over the sound of the helicopter as he shouted to the press. In case you were wondering, Alex Acosta is now the 14th cabinet member to resign or be fired since Trump took office. The list includes Tom Price. Do you remember? Going way back. Tom Price, Reince Priebus, John Kelly, Rex Tillerson, David Shulkin, Scott Pruitt, Nikki Haley, Jeff Sessions, Ryan Zinke, Jim Mattis, Patrick Shanahan, Linda McMahon, Kirsten Nielsen, and now Alex Acosta. There's more breaking news, and this one's kind of disturbing as well. Robert Mueller's scheduled July 17th testimony before Congress, the House Judiciary, and Intelligence Committees has been postponed until the following week. Wednesday, July 24th is the new date, which is right before Congress leaves for its August recess. The delay seems to revolve around time constraints, as House Judiciary and Intelligence members have been negotiating to give lawmakers more time for questioning than had been allotted. Each committee, Intelligence and Judiciary, were only going to get 2 hours. All the members on the Judiciary Committee weren't even going to be able to ask their 5 minutes of questions because they couldn't fit them in 2 hours. So under this new tentative agreement, allegedly, the Judiciary Committee would be granted an extra hour to question Mueller. Ooh. Just remember, I was alerted to this fact today. John Dean spent 5 days testifying before Congress. We're going to get 5 hours? Nancy Pelosi, go home already. All right. In other news, Donald Trump failed and caved. And those would be my words. The Washington Post said he backed down. The New York Times said he had, quote, abandoned his attempt. The Wall Street Journal characterized it as a, quote, major retreat. News outlets didn't mince words on Thursday when describing Trump walking back earlier promises to include a citizenship question on the 2020 census. Fox, though, Fox stood alone. Their online headline read, "Trump not backing down in effort to count citizens amid census fight, announces executive order." The bottom line, the 2020 census questionnaire will not ask about citizenship status. Donald Trump then held a Rose Garden event after the troll summit we'll get to in a moment, to declare victory in issuing a lame executive order that actually follows a course proposed more than a year ago to assemble data from federal agencies and departments already in existence. So he began with a nonsensical attack on the left wing, who apparently have a bias toward the word citizenship.
Are you a citizen of the United States of America? Oh, gee, I'm sorry. I just can't answer.
What is wrong with this
guy? And that's after spending billions and billions of dollars.
Listen to this part.
There used to be a time when you could answer questions like that very easily.
You still can, you moron.
There used to be a time when you could proudly declare, I am a citizen of the United States.
You still can.
Now they're trying to erase the very existence of a very important word.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Thing, citizenship.
No.
Far left Democrats in our country are determined to conceal the number of illegal aliens.
Oh God! All right. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just can't. I just can't. By the way, he was backed up by his Roy Cohn. Yes, Attorney General Bill Barr did his best Roy Cohn for his lord and master, and actually congratulated Trump for this bullshit executive order.
Thank you, Mr. President, and congratulations on today's executive order. The Supreme Court correctly recognized...
Ugh, all right, I'm not even going to do any more. By the way, an alert from somebody in the YouTube chat room. Mike Gravel is just 2,000 unique donors away from making the debate stage this month. You can donate a dollar to his campaign at MikeGravel.org, G-R-A-V-E-L. Hopefully you heard the interview with him that I did a couple months ago, played on the broadcast last night. All right, we're going to get our guest in a moment, but I got to tell you the other story that happened yesterday. In a vile Trumpian display, a cabal of internet trolls descended on the White House yesterday for what the administration called a social media summit. Instead of speaking with representatives, though, from companies like Twitter and Facebook, Trump invited conspiracy theorists, a meme creator, and a plagiarist, among others, and praised them for their reprehensible trolling. Here's a little bit of the insanity that came out of his mouth. Sorry, I'm going to do it to you again. But just listen to the shit that he was spewing to these trolls in the White House.
I call Twitter a typewriter. That's what I really call Twitter. I'm very, very careful. I'm actually a good speller. But everyone said the fingers aren't as good as the brain. There's no doubt in my mind that I should have millions and millions. I have millions of people, so many people.
Ugh,
I wouldn't believe
God.
It. But I know that we've been blocked. I used to watch it. Be like a rocket ship when I put out a beauty. Like when I said, remember I said somebody was spying on me? That thing was like a rocket.
Oh,
I get
my
a call
God.
Two minutes later. Did you say that? I said, yeah, I said that. Well, it's exploding.
And he's bragging about the fact that he accused the Obama administration of spying on his campaign, something that didn't happen. Ugh. God, it was just infuriating. And then, after this troll summit wrapped up, they moved out. Everybody moved out to the Rose Garden for the announcement of the executive order to not include a question on citizenship in the 2020 census. Go figure. So, out at the Rose Garden, a press event, by the way, the troll brigade was seated up front. And the press corps was put all the way in the back. So Playboy White House reporter and CNN contributor Brian Karam got into a bit of a verbal confrontation with, of all people, Sebastian Gorka. Yeah, that guy. So it appears from video taken at the scene that Karam was engaged in a back and forth with some Trump supporters, some of these trolls. He said the group appeared eager for demonic possession, to which Gorka quipped back, and you're a journalist, right? Karam told Gorka that they could head outside for a talk. Gorka walked over and shouted, "You are a punk! You are not a journalist! You are a punk!" And then I should play this. Damn it. I can't play the video. For some reason, I couldn't download the video, but I can play for you the audio that you'll hear. Hold on. You'll hear. It goes by very quickly once it loads. Here we go. I think. Come on. You can do it. Come on, computer. Story of my life.
It's threatening me in the Rose Garden. You are a punk.
You're not a journalist. You're a punk.
What's going on?
Should the president be allowed to talk to you on Twitter?
You should not be attacking journalists like this.
Just for the record, he can kick your punk ass.
Oh, you hear these trolls? Just for the record, he can kick your punk ass. Oh, my God. So what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to call Brian Karam and get him on the line. He's been on the show before. In fact, back in the day when the White House used to hold daily press briefings, I became a fan of Brian Karam's. He's the chief White House correspondent for Playboy. He's a CNN political analyst and host of a new podcast. So we're going to get him on the line in just a moment. While I do that, let me play for you another clip from Harry Shearer from that same album. This one's called Songs in the Key of L. Here we go. It's dialing music for me.
From NBC Tel Records comes the next great CD soundtrack of one of your all-time favorite TV shows. The first ever full-length CD featuring Tom Brokaw, the NBC Nightly News, singing Songs in the Key of L.
Laurel Canyon Boulevard, Larchmont Boulevard, I love L.A.
This is so bad, but it's so funny.
Most people who watch Nightly News don't even know that I sing. And yet, it's something I did each broadcast, you know, between the stories, just to keep myself alert.
Layla, you've got me on my knees, Layla.
We've brought you musical highlights from your favorite TV movies and shows. Now, for the first time, musical highlights that you've never enjoyed till now.
Isn't she lovely? Isn't she lovely tonight? If you like ukulele lady, ukulele lady like you.
My musical taste, I guess, is a lot like my news sense. All over the map.
Love me or leave me, or let me be lonely. You won't believe me, but I love you only. I'd rather be lonely than happy with somebody else.
Songs in the Key of L is not sold in any store, except the NBC stores, and even there it's often not available. So order now.
Lay, lady, lay. Lay across my big brass bed, lady.
Call 1-866-NBC-TIE-IN. That's 1-866-NBC-TIE-IN to order Tom Brokaw's Songs in the Key of L. Or for even more delays, go online at NBCTVmusic.com/Brokaw/HTML.
The things I never get to say to the Nightly News audience, now I get to say to you, the paying customer.
La 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 means I love you.
Songs in the Key of L from NBC Tel Records. It's must buy music.
Yeah. Again, that was a bit of comedy from Harry Shearer, who you heard at the top of the show. Songs in the Key of L, as done by Tom Brokaw. That from Harry's 2006 album, Dropping Anchor. Speaking of the news profession, as promised, we do have a member of that esteemed profession on the line. I believe he's there. Brian Karam, you with us?
Yeah. Hey. Glad to be here.
So glad you could join us today. I, as I told you when you were on with us, you were on my show a few months back. During the days when they actually had daily White House press briefings, I became a big fan of yours because you weren't scared. You weren't afraid to stand up and tell Sarah Sanders what you thought. You didn't pull any punches in that room. Do you miss those daily briefings?
Well, yes and no.
Right.
I think the President of the United States owes us a briefing so that we can be informed as to what our government's doing. But they were counterproductive for many reasons. If we brought back the briefing the way it was, or the way questions were, you know, actually answered, and there were policies to discuss, yes, I'd love to see them back. There are so many questions that are unanswered about what the government is doing that they're needed, but I don't think we're going to get them while Trump is president.
No. How about the new replacement for Sarah Sanders? I can't even remember what her name is.
Stephanie.
Stephanie Grisham.
She has just taken over, and so far she's been very kind. She says she doesn't want to be, you know, come a skit on Saturday Night Live. And I think, you know, I think she's well-meaning, but, you know, it's early in her tenure, and we'll see what happens.
Okay. Have they given you any indication of whether or not they're going to bring back the press briefings? Maybe not on a daily basis?
I don't think those will be brought back anytime soon, no.
You know, it's amazing to me that Donald Trump he loves obviously talking to the press as much as he says he doesn't, but he always does it over the loud whirr of the helicopters. It's so that he can pretend he doesn't hear a question that he doesn't want to answer?
Well, he does that. I mean, today, I mean, imagine dragging your labor secretary out in front of the White House press corps on the South Lawn as you're getting on the Marine One and telling them that you're going to resign. I couldn't believe that happened.
It's typical for this guy. It's unbelievable. But Brian Karam, I asked you here today for a specific reason. Yesterday, of course, Donald Trump held his troll summit, what they called a new media summit or a social media summit. And then afterwards, everybody went out to the Rose Garden for an event at which Trump announced he was caving on the census question by claiming victory. I want to ask about all that, but first I want to ask about what happened at the end of it, because a video has been circulating at the end
something
of Trump.
Something happened at the end of it?
Something happened at the end of it. You were involved in a bit of a kerfuffle with one Sebastian Gorka. So what happened? What went on there?
I can only tell you what happened from my end. At the end, he finished speaking. We were all wondering why we had to be made to wait an hour for him to show up. By the time he did show up, I mean, we waited out in that heat. There was thunderstorms. He had the 3:45. He could have just announced that thing at his 3:45, you know, social media summit, but he didn't. So he dragged us all out to the Rose Garden. He gave the social media people seats, and then the press had to be around the perimeter. And we were told we were going to have a news conference or a press conference, but it really wasn't a press conference. He just made a statement.
Right.
Had Barr there, the Attorney General William Barr, and then he had Wilbur. I think it was Wilbur Ross that was there. And so they made their statement. And as they're leaving, I said, Mr. President, could you stay and take a few questions? And then someone said, he's already spoken to the real media.
Oh, God.
Then somebody else said, don't be sad. And I said, ooh, I feel like I'm in a crowd of people who are about to become or who want to become demonically possessed. They actually laughed at that.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, unbeknownst to me, this guy Gorka, who I've seen, I don't know, once, I had a conversation with him once, and it wasn't actually that bad of a conversation, but he came out of my blind side, and he started yelling and screaming. I said, hey, brother, we can talk here. We can go outside and have an extended talk if you want. So he decided that meant I wanted to challenge him to a fight.
Oy.
And so he started calling me a punk,
uh-huh.
And I just stood there and let him ramble. I'm not going to get in a fight with a guy on a Rose Garden, for the love of God.
Right.
And then somebody else said, well, he could have kicked your punk. Mm-hmm. Took
uh-huh.
it. And then another one got into a it was a less of a fracas, but someone started giving Jim Acosta grief about his book. And then another one, I think it was Gorka, called another reporter I'll try to be nice about it, took his hat. So then it kind of broke up. It ended, and we all went about our separate ways.
That's amazing. Did Secret Service come around when things got, you know?
Well, Secret Service came at the end, and they said, hey, man, you don't have to worry about me. He goes, I know, let's just, you know, go on about it. And it was a Secret Service guy I know, and he goes, I'm more worried about that guy. And
yeah.
I said, yeah, I'm fine. Don't worry.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Were any of reporters allowed into the summit, what I call the troll summit?
The pool spray was allowed in briefly. I think it was like an hour long. So I'll be honest with you. I was only peripherally aware of what that was, because I've been chasing, you know, other leads on stories that kind of, you know, really matter.
Right.
And so I
gotcha.
So I hadn't really paid a whole lot of attention to who was going to be in this summit or what it was about, and I didn't really care too much about it. So the pool was let in towards the end, I guess, and his speech was, you know, we could hear it piped into the basement of the White House, and that was fodder for the that was whew. All I can tell you is that was an interesting speech. And then after that, the pool came in, and that was, and then we had to wait, break things down. They kicked the pool out of the room and sent us back to the Rose Garden. It was amazing.
And then when they all emerged from their little meeting there, and they placed all these trolls, they're internet trolls. That's what they are, up front, you know, in the good seats, and they put you guys in the back and around the edges. I just, it's mind blowing the way this White House treats journalists and elevates internet trolls. I mean, what's his name? James O'Keefe was there, and Trump praises these people. It's just opposite.
Yeah, and I got to be honest with you, I don't pay attention to these people. I don't know who they are.
Ah, you're lucky. I wish I did.
So they come after me, and I'm going, who are you? Because I don't have time to be worrying about internet trolls when there's real news to be gathered and real issues to discuss.
Right.
There was one woman there who kept telling us that we need to be like them, the new media. I said, man, with respect, you're not a journalist unless you have a copy editor. Let's start there. You know, it's okay to have a voice,
right.
And I'm happy, and I support, you know, any free speech.
Yep.
I'm glad that you want to, but don't mistake what you do for what everyone on this side of the rope does on a daily basis.
That's right.
Standards and practices that we adhere to on a daily basis. And I'm not going to sit still for someone going after us on that. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's not me. That's not the way I operate.
Absolutely. Brian Karam is with us, a senior White House reporter for Playboy, a CNN political analyst, author of a number of books, and host of a new podcast, a fairly recent podcast, called Just Ask the Question. It's at justaskthequestion.com. And Brian, I'm jealous you got to interview Randy Rainbow.
He's a good buddy. I love Randy. Funny guy. Too.
He's hysterical.
I mean, if you haven't caught him, he's a very funny guy.
Oh my God. You know, I live in South Florida and he's from here. And actually, he did a show on his current tour here in Fort Lauderdale, I don't know, around 6 months ago. And we went and it was just a delightful night. He is so he's so talented and so funny. And I'm jealous that you interviewed him. So, in addition to your hard hitting journalism,
he was my date to the White House correspondent.
Was he? Wow, very cool. So tell us more about the podcast. Who do you talk to?
Well, the podcast is called Just Ask the Question, and it's based basically on advice that was given to me by Helen Thomas the first time I ever walked into the White House. And she said, Brian, it doesn't matter if they answer your question. It doesn't matter if they don't like the question. Just ask the question, because that way they can't say that the issue hasn't been heard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never about the answers. It's always about asking the question. The answers are up to them. So that's the basis of it. And then I just like to interview people from politics and pop culture and have extended. I don't like to do it over the phone. I like to, you know, sit down, have a bite to eat, be in an office and sit down and talk for a while and just have an extended conversation on the issues and on what's of interest. So with Randy, of course, it was just how he got into doing this and his background and what drove him to it. And the most telling thing he told me was that Donald Trump reminded him of his dad.
Wow.
And so that's why he had such a good beat on who Donald Trump was. And then Carl Reiner was a fun interview as well.
I'll bet.
Talking to him about the Dick Van Dyke Show. And I told him the thing that I enjoyed most about him, first time he ever came into my consciousness was with a movie called The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming. And he had the lead in that. And that he had some great stories about that. And, of course, on Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore. And then Sam Donaldson is my other favorite interview so far. Sam was my mentor in the White House, and his was an eye-opening interview. And you know, all the politics in it is just trying to get behind the issues and break down some of these barriers between, you know, the extreme right and the extreme left, and try to find middle ground.
You have an interesting variety of guests that have been on with you, and I'm guessing you must be a fan of Jamie Raskin's because he's the only two-timer on there.
Well, actually, Norm Eisen I've done twice, too.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep.
I didn't notice that.
But that's Jamie I've done twice, and that
was great.
First time was over the impeachment, and I think the second time was over the first time was over the emoluments clause, and the second time was over impeachment. Trying to go over exactly what the what is an emoluments clause, and of course, what are the steps towards impeachment, and if the Democrats are actually going to do it.
And are they?
I don't know. I have to tell you, as upset as the Republicans make me, the Democrats are fare no better.
No, I'm right there with you.
The Democrats, the Republicans are going to hold their nose, and they're going to vote for Donald Trump in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats are going to eat their own trying to find a perfect candidate and never will.
Mm.
So I always say the Democrats are the only party I know that can snatch defeat out of the
jaws
of victory.
I've been saying it for years. And unfortunately, just when you think it's going to get better, it doesn't. And now
both major parties are
horrible.
Are horrifying in their own ways.
Oy. And this is, I'm sure the frustration's got to seep over into your work. I mean, this is what you do for a living. You've got to cover these people. And don't you just want to shake them sometimes and say, no, do it this way?
Well, at this point in my life, I'll just be happy if the, the death threats on my wife stop.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine. Can't even imagine. Brian Karam, I miss seeing you in those daily press briefings because you always, it's like, yeah, you get them. As one who does not regularly read Playboy, I do catch you on CNN from time to time. How does it work at covering the White House for Playboy? Do you write features on what's going on?
I have a weekly column on Playboy.com that you can access. It's an opinion piece. It's a column. And then I do features and cover events. So, I went down to the border with the president when he went down there.
Oh, yeah.
I interviewed some drug dealers, some illegal immigrants, some people on this side, people on that side, to kind of give a report of what's really going on the border. In Laredo, Texas is where I went for that. I've gone to several of his rallies and done stories on the rallies, and we just, we try to offer our readers a something that you can't get in the daily coverage.
Right.
So you can get a kind of a view behind the curtain,
gotcha.
Which is tough with this administration because they have a lot of curtain.
Yeah, no kidding. Any predictions for the next year and a half? anything that you think is bound to happen or won't happen?
It's chaos, and it's going to stay that way.
Yeah.
The frightening thing to me is, like, yesterday was a very weird day, and I've had a lot of weird days in that White House. But it seems to have accelerated, and it seems to be unraveling. I can't get a handle on it. I can't put my arms around it and tell you exactly, but it feels like something that is in a death spiral.
Yeah.
And what's scary is you don't know where it's going to go. But I do know that if there are four more years of Donald Trump, that you will not recognize this country at the end of those 4 years.
I agree with you. I fully agree. I think we are in a national emergency. And look, during primary season, I advocate for you go for the best possible candidate you can, not just someone who can beat Trump, the best we can get, because we've got a lot of work to turn this country around once we get rid of them. But once we hit the general election, we got to do everything we can to defeat this guy. It's the future of the planet, I think, is at stake.
It's on so many issues that we have really stumbled and fallen. And you can start with the First Amendment. They don't really understand what the First Amendment is. This isn't I don't recognize this country when I was in the Rose Garden yesterday.
No,
would ever think that that kind of an incident would occur in the Rose Garden?
Exactly,
and that these trolls would be, embraced in the Rose Garden. It's just unfathomable.
Right.
But it's more than that. It's our energy policy. It's our environmental policy. If you talk, there's a guy named Dr. George Luber, and I urge everyone to look him up. He's the CDC scientist who was in charge of the CDC portion of climate change. And he was looking at it as a health crisis. And what he has been exiled from the CDC. His program has been put under the auspices of I think it's asthma, and it's not asthma research, it's asthma medicine. Do you take your asthma medicine?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes, and we also have climate change. I mean, he's lost control. He's not allowed on campus. They have a be on a BOLO alert for him, so he can't even go to his, he's got to work out of his home. And his whole thing was, look, climate change is not only real, and we could, but we can adapt to some of it. What we can't adapt to is when the CO2 emissions go over 600 parts per million. And he said, we are destined to accomplish that within the next 20 to 30 years. And when we do, it's going to mean decreased vegetable production. Mm. It's going to be decreased. It's going to lead to starvation and other diseases. So he looks at CO2 as a pollutant, which was what they were charged to, you know, to look at pollutants with the CDC and how it affects diseases. And he's got a whole list of range of diseases and talks about the millions of people that are going to be in peril and die of starvation and other diseases. And it's a very frightening, and this isn't projections based on supposition. This is just using the numbers that are there.
Right.
And going, if we continue our output at this rate, then at this point in time, we are going to reach this in the atmosphere and these things will occur. And it's not, it's the science is irrefutable. The Trump administration has dumped all of that. The Trump administration has sold us out in so many areas, and people are happy because of the economy, but this is an artificial economy that has been spurred on by deregulation and, of course, letting the robber barons run loose and free.
Absolutely.
And there's a heavy price to pay for that. And if we don't make changes as Americans into how we elect our officials and who we elect as our officials, we're going to pay the price for our own stupidity. And I don't know how else to tell. And we're all at fault.
Yeah.
We can't blame Donald Trump. We can't blame the Republicans. It's everybody.
Yeah.
And we don't vote. We allow gerrymandered districts. We don't favor education. It's a mess. And it's got to get cleaned up. And the Trump administration has taken advantage of the mess. And it's creating more and feathering his own nest while he does it.
Well, on that optimistic note, we wrap up the week. Brian Karam, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for standing up to the trolls and the bigots and the crazy at the White House. Find Brian's podcast at justaskthequestion.com, Brian J. Karam. And he's on Twitter also at Brian, K-A-R-E-M. Thank you so much. It was great talking with you. And I always look forward to seeing you on my TV.
As always, it's a pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
All right. We obviously ran a little bit over, but that's okay because we can do that. You know, freedom. We'll edit it for the podcast. And anyway, have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Send our thoughts and prayers or whatever you do to New Orleans. Thanks to Harry Shearer. Thanks to Brian Karam. Thanks to you for listening. Until Tuesday, keep your head up. I'll see you then. Bye.